home for the best coverage of the Jazz, Utes, and Cougars is right here on The Zone. This is JJ and Alex, presented by G2G Bars on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Welcome back in, JJ and Alex, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jeremiah Jensen, Stevenson Sylvester with you. Thanks for listening today. What a day it has been. Breaking news all over the place. The big story of the day, BYU has found a replacement for Mark Pope. They have a new men's head basketball coach. And it's an interesting hire. It's Kevin Young, the Phoenix Suns assistant coach, the highest paid assistant coach in the NBA. He will now take over the program. It's been reported that he'll receive a 7-year, $30 million deal. Yes, a coach at BYU will be making $4.25 million per year. It's a huge hire for BYU. Many didn't even think it was possible, even though he was a perfect fit for the position, because it was going to be so hard to lure him away from the NBA, Sly. But here he is. BYU made it happen. Ryan Smith wrote a check, Danny Ainge made the connections, and boom.
So, Ryan, is there any way that I can get a hold of this checkbook? I mean, I can set myself up for 7 years of commitment right here.
Hey, hey, you never know. You never know. We're always looking for something. JJ and Alex is brought to you by G2G Bars with all natural ingredients, no preservatives, and plenty of protein. G2G Bars are perfect for anyone who needs a tasty and nutritious boost. Danny Ainge was busy today. Not only was he speaking about that, but he also had something to say to Jazz Nation. That is the cut at 5 o'clock.
It's time for the biggest story of the day. This is What Made the Cut with JJ and Alex on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
JJ and Alex also brought to you by Trajan Wealth. Give Trajan Wealth a call today, your local financial fiduciary, 801-899-7600, or visit their website at TrajanWealth.com. We had the privilege of hearing from Danny Ainge today, kind of an end-of-season wrap-up for the Utah Jazz. We don't get to hear from him often, but we did today, and he was able to answer the questions from the Utah Jazz media on a number of topics. Here's a sample of today's press conference with Danny Ainge.
Danny, good morning. Hey, a lot of people ask, you know, the direction, and can you maybe help us understand what the, if you're looking for guards, you're looking for wings, or all the above in this next phase?
Let me ask you, leave the mic with him for a second. What do you think the direction is, Craig? Just give me your thoughts on it.
Obviously, youth is one. Athleticism, it would be another. Length would be one. Defending would be, I think, another high-level need or want, but I only call games, and you get to select the player.
It was a good answer. You answered your own question. I tell my grandchildren that all the time. You can answer that question.
Anything else?
I mean, we want good players. Yeah. We want a team that is better than the 23rd ranked team in the NBA. So, yeah, all of the above.
What are your thoughts on the draft, both just at the top and the overall depth of it?
Yeah, so it's a unique draft. I think it's harder to find, you know, franchise-altering players in this draft than some drafts. I mean, last year you had, like, the top three were pretty well-defined, even by this time. Maybe not the exact order, but some order, the top three. I think this year it's not. I'm not sure who those are. But I do believe that we'll be able to find some good players in this draft.
With multiple draft picks and a lot of cap space, what optionality do you have this offseason?
Yeah, lots of good options. Good question. And that's what we're trying to keep is our flexibility and options open. Our plan is not to come to training camp with six kids under 20 years old. That's not a real good option for anybody. I can't say that won't happen and say that's not like option A or option B. Maybe not option C.
Danny, Jay-Z, when we were talking about to him, you know, a couple of weeks ago, said that.
By the way, Jay-Z misses all of you, and he's doing very good. I talked with him this morning. He's going to do his 2,500 steps today, and watch some film, get ready for the draft. So he's doing well.
Good to hear.
But he says hi to all of you, and I miss him as much as you. Too much work.
We were talking to him, and you know, he said one of his goals is to trade for a significant player, you know, and as part of this rebuild, if not this summer, then next. What kind of star would you be looking for in such a trade, and how do you see that trade landscape kind of panning out over the course of this particular offseason?
You know, this has been talked about a little bit. I mean, quite a bit, actually, I think. I guess the best way to explain that is, you know, like – In my experience, in Boston, when we were there, and we had Paul Pierce, and Paul was a terrific player, an all-star player, Hall of Fame player, and you know, our plan was to we lost 19 games in a row in 2007, and our plan was Kevin Durant, but when the lottery came around, we got knocked back three spots to number five. And our plan changed immediately, and we were able to eventually land Ray Allen and KG, which were never available before that moment in time, but we were there and we were ready. So it took a lot of good fortune. Obviously, it took some bad fortune to go win a championship, because if we'd have drafted KD, which was a top plan, we probably wouldn't have won a championship unless for quite a while as a young player. So, but the bottom line is obviously either of those are very good options. But we didn't have all of those options in front of us. In the NBA, we're trying to find good players, like Jay-Z said. That's our objective. We've been close. We felt like we've been close once in this process that would have changed the dynamic of our team immediately and the direction, and would have been much more clear to your question, what kind of players do you need? Then you have the answer. But that hasn't happened, and we do have assets and we do have flexibility. So we don't want to panic. We don't want to go from the 23rd best team and worst team in the NBA, or 23rd best team in the NBA, to the, you know, 18th best by giving up a bunch of things either. Like, that's not our objective. Our objective is longevity and quality going forward. Good quality. Sorry, I mean good longevity. Yeah.
With the number of young players coming into the league now, what age, or, you know, when do you guys start tracking these players, these young players coming into the league?
I just got back from the Hoop Summit.
USA, yes.
Yeah, USA versus the world team, the best international players all in one setting in Portland. And there were a few future NBA players there that were 17. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we track them even younger than that. We have a grassroots group here in the organization that is at high school games all year long, and we'll spend the entire summer at sanctioned high school games, I would say, and that are at all the AAU programs that are sanctioned by the NBA, which is getting more and more.
Anything up there? Any names you want to throw out there?
No, I should stay away from the names of the 17-year-olds. Yeah.
Curious, you've made the midseason trades with veterans, which has taken, you know, a 500 start, 26-26, and ended 5-25. In your mind, why was that the way to go instead of making those trades earlier at the start of the season and then having a better draft pick later?
I think that's a very good question, and I think a lot of people have that. That's been answered a lot, too, and for some reason there seems to be some confusion on that. But If we just had a bunch of young players in the draft, we just had six draft picks, and we had the ability to go trade for a franchise-changing player, we had to change the whole team. Like, we don't want to go get a franchise, but because we have Lauri Markkanen, as an example, as one of our good players, and others, we don't feel like we have to make a wholesale change. Like, we can try to find. Like, the last 2 years, I'm not sure – last year, we knew what our team was, and I think they surprised themselves and surprised us, like how good that team was to start the season. Again, I will say this, though, that records are deceiving, I think. I mean, obviously, it always matters the record at the end of the season, but I think that our objective is to, you know, find a player or two, and we're ready to roll. We're ready to go big game hunting. And that hasn't happened in the last 2 years. But if we start all over, like then we're 3 years possibly or 4 years from being anywhere. We feel like we're closer than that. And we have a chance. I mean, we're going all in this summer to try to figure out what we can do to get better. When I say all in, that doesn't mean that we're going to throw all our chips in and like championship or bust. I'm saying our mindset is that we're doing only to try to win. That's our only objective for the first through till we get to July. And if, you know, if we don't land anything, we don't make any deals, we don't land anything, then our direction could change at that moment and wait till the next time that we can try to build a roster. Does that make sense? Did I answer that? Not really.
So did you want to have a team in place in case you made a move that you could win right then? Is that what you're saying? You want to have the veterans to put around somebody if you acquired somebody, say, in January?
That's the benefit of it. Yeah, like there's another way to do it and just get rid of all of our good players and build, have a Chester full and then try to build it that way. That's a possibility. But, you know, like I said, with the in the Boston scenario I used earlier, going from the beginning of the season and losing – and we're the second worst team in the NBA, and we get the number 5 pick, which is not going to change our franchise at all. Only the number 1 and 2 picks are going to change it, right? So there's no guarantees in this business at all. That's why you can't just have a plan that is like what you're going to get. Like we didn't have a plan. We didn't have a plan when we traded Paul Pearson and Kevin Garnett and got Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, you know, the next two drafts. Like those things they work out. And, but you put yourself in position to do that. Does that make sense? I mean, but to answer your question, yeah, like we're not as far. We're a big trade away, right? So we explored that all summer, last summer.
Are you interested in extending Lauri Markkanen or do you want to let that play out?
I would just prefer not to talk about that, but I mean, I think it's pretty clear that Lauri Markkanen is a very good player. We love him. Yeah, we'd like to have him around.
And Will talked about how for the rookies, it was about putting them in uncomfortable situations and watching them grow. I just want to get your take on just how do you think, what was their growth like over the last month and a half, 2 months of the season?
Well, first I will say that, you know, it's not ideal to play your young players with all of your veterans out because then it puts a lot of undue pressure on them. I mean, so as an example, Keontae, I thought had a very good year. He had some ups and downs, and I kind of like that he had those ups and downs. I kind of like the fact that the scouting, the most important person to stop on our entire team the night, many nights the second half of the year was him. So the best defender was guarding him. The team defensive schemes were to stop him. And so he had to face some of that that he probably wouldn't face if Lowry and Colin and JC were all healthy. So it's not ideal. But there's value in that too.
Keontae has talked about his relationship with Avery Bradley a little bit. But can you describe the benefit of having Avery Bradley with you in the front office?
Yeah, so Avery is one of my favorites ever. Avery was not my hire, however. I introduced Avery to Will and to Justin and told Avery, like, you got to prove to them that they need you. And but I'm a big fan of him. I loved him in Boston and my time with him. He's a real pro. I think he has a calm demeanor that he can relate to people very well. There's been other young players on the staff that have told me the same things, or of the players that have told me the same thing about Avery. So we're excited to have Avery here, but I think he can be a mentor to some of them. I'm not sure he knows for sure if he wants to get in the world of coaching or the world of front office, but he'll do a little bit of both. But he does have that calm, quiet way of him that I think he can get through to players. And he also has an intensity on the defensive end that I think can hopefully help our guards better next year.
Danny, I wanted to ask you just in terms when you communicate with Will about plans both in the immediate and long-term future, what are those communications like between you and he?
Will and
yourself.
So Will and Justin talk every day. And I would say Will and I talk every other day. I mean, when they're on the road. I mean, talk every day when they're here. But, there's constant communication with Will about these questions that you're asking. Like, he doesn't have any doubts of what we're doing. He has questions, and we talk them through. And, like, there's no guarantee that everything we're doing is 100% right. But we feel like we have a very good plan and a good group to accomplish our goals.
If you look back at your two builds in Boston, there were kind of unique pieces that just stuck around the whole way. Kendrick Perkins, Marcus Smart, there were lots of turnover, but they held. What were the characteristics of those players that was why you held them the whole time? And are there any players on this group that you've seen have those characteristics?
Yeah, so, those characteristics are just toughness and, you know, that competitive fire that is their strength. Over their skills, that competitive fire is what attracted me. Like Tony Allen was another one. He didn't stick with us, but that's a whole nother story. But I think that those kind of characteristics, I would say the guy on our team this year that exemplified that the most is Chris Dunn. Chris gave us a defensive presence more than anybody else on the perimeter. And so whether it's a 10th man role or a starter, I don't know the answer to that going forward, but I think that he has a role in the NBA, and we liked what he brought to the table in the same regard.
Kind of piggybacking off of the question about the young guys and their growth this season, and you said it's not ideal for them to be playing not without the veterans. Do you think that maybe their growth is stalled a little bit because they were playing with each other so much, and it's going to be so much different when you actually have the team that's going to go for it? That they're going to be playing a different style of basketball. Their roles are going to be completely different.
I think it was better. I mean, like, so especially in Keontae's case, who played most of the year here with the big club, I think he had both. He was able to see both. And he's a smart kid, and he was able to see, wow, that's hard. I'm not sure he understands everything of why it's hard, but, like, we've been able to talk about that I think that he had enough success to have confidence in his future and yet enough to learn and enough bad play that will get him in the gym and put light a fire under him as well. So it's a pretty good combination for him. With Taylor, I thought Taylor pretty much played the same role that he'll play. In the last game, he got more opportunities. They actually ran some offense for him. They did a little bit of that in the G League as well. And he's just young, and he's got more growth to do than Keontae right now. But he's shown signs from, you know, just his defensive length and presence and his character and his desire to become good. And I think that he got a taste. So I don't think it was bad or a waste. I think that he got a taste of the NBA. And I think that he's got a great desire to work really hard this summer and get better.
What do you want to see from the three young guys this summer? And, you know, what are some uncomfortable positions that you guys as an organization can put them in order to kind of expedite growth and development?
Well, we have pretty well, we've organized, plans for them for the whole summer. And I think they're excited about it, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be a lot of work. But they will play in the summer league, assuming they're healthy and still doing well. But, yeah, we plan on them playing in the summer league along with whatever draft picks we have, along with Darius Bazley and Kenny Lofton. The free agents, we're not sure, like Johnny Juzang, but those guys are in our plans, and we'll see what they'll be with us throughout the summer.
An understanding on Keontae, looks like it takes about 5,000 pick and rolls to get good at it. Like on big wings, it takes like 3.5 years so what are the benchmarks that you're looking at with that understanding on a Keontae or a Taylor in their first sample size that you got in what's obviously a much longer process?
Yeah, so I'll talk about Keyonte first. I would say Keyonte, played small forward last year as a freshman at Baylor. He played point guard for the first time in his life this year. And he's a full-time NBA point guard. And like I said, half the games he played this year, he's the focal point of the opposition defense. I think that is a great learning experience, like learning to run pick and rolls. He's like way better now than he was to start the season. I'm still not sure he's a franchise point guard, but I think he can play point guard. But I think that he can play with another guard playing the point, and he can play off the ball too. Matter of fact, he's probably more comfortable at that at this moment in time. But this experience of learning the point guard position was a big step for him, and it just provides a lot of versatility for our team going forward. Anyone? Did I answer your question?
Yeah, you did. No, okay. How about
Taylor? Oh, Taylor. Yeah, so I think Taylor is, like I said, he's just a little further behind than Keyonte. And so, yeah, he's doing the same thing. I mean, he's trying to, as you saw, his shooting was getting better and better. He was working a lot on his shooting and his arch of his shot. It's been a little bit flat. But he shot a pretty good percentage, I think, in the last month or so of the season, started knocking down those shots. That's a big step for him, but he's got to get a lot better defensively, handling the ball. We saw in the last game where they actually ran some of Lowry's plays for him, and he made some really nice passes on the move, on the dribble. There's a lot of good signs for Taylor going forward. And same with Bryce. Bryce the same way, I would say, with Taylor. They're in a different way. Bryce has a good feel for the game. He's got a better knack of scoring than Taylor, but his shooting, I think he's a better shooter than his numbers would indicate this year, but he can pass and he can shoot and he can score.
That's Danny Ainge today addressing the media, wrapping up the 2023-24 season for the Utah Jazz. A lot of interesting things there. You can hear the entire press conference. That was only half of it. Spent 40 minutes with the media. You can go to kslsports.com and check out our podcast feed to listen to it all. We're going to break it down next with somebody who's perfect for today's news and for what Danny Ainge just had to say. Tim Lacombe, the coach, will join us next on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
You know what's coming.
Your daily deep dive into everything Utah Jazz.
It's time!
All season long and even in the offseason, it's Jazz Daily with JJ and Alex on your exclusive home of Utah Jazz basketball. 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The Jazz Daily, JJ and Alex, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone, Jeremiah Jensen, Stevenson Sylvester. Golfers, don't miss the Uinta Multi-Vendor Demo Day happening this Saturday at Mulligan's Golf and Games. This is your chance to try out the new releases from all the major golf manufacturers and register to win free prizes. It's happening this Saturday at Mulligan's Golf and Games. Uinta Golf, unmatched service, unmatched expertise. I can't think of a better guest to have on right now with everything that happened today than our next guest. It's the coach, Tim Lacombe. How you doing?
What's up? How you guys doing?
Lots going. But can you make the news stop, Tim? There's like, what's up is everything. We got the NHL coming to Utah. We have the stuff with BYU. And we had Danny Ainge today. I mean, I can only take so much breaking news and interesting stuff going on, but it makes for good sports talk radio, so let's dig into it. The first thing I want to get you on is the reaction that you had to the hire of Kevin Young at BYU. I didn't think that they would be able to pull this off, bringing somebody that should be coaching as a head coach in the NBA to come to BYU. How'd they do it?
Well, I think, this was the first time that they've made a hire with the Big 12 as the backdrop. And I think it's been pretty obvious that with Coach Pope leaving, I think there was a all hands on deck mentality. I think they understood how important it was to act quickly. But man, a lot happened. They really they got a lot done in a short period of time. And I think did a heck of a job in identifying. I don't know Kevin. I know just about everybody in Hoop, but Kevin and I have never met. But I'll tell you this much, just in talking to people I've talked to today, from people I really respect,
nothing but just incredibly good stuff, not only just from a, you know, basketball perspective, but a very humble and gracious guy, you know, that I think made the choice to step off the crazy NBA carousel and hunker down. I know he's got two younger kids that he wants to see, you know, grow up. And the NBA is a tough, even doing what I do, which is just basically living on I-15 between Provo and Delta Center. You know, it's crazy on my life. I can't even imagine with a coach doing everything they have to do. So in some respects, I think it's an opportunity for him to watch his kids play hoop and watch his kids grow up, all the while being heavily involved in a crazy athletic or a competitive pursuit of college basketball, and to represent a place that's important to him, you know, because of his faith.
And getting paid adequately.
I would say pretty good. I'm going to say it wasn't like that when I was around. You know, but, hey.
Tim, you got to get back into coaching, my friend. You got to get back on that train.
Man, it's 7 years,
$30 million at BYU. Are you kidding me?
I'm telling you, man, when I first went into BYU, I remember going to my first kind of big athletic department meeting, and, you know, budgets were talked about, and, you know, I didn't really think much of it, but when they went independent, you know, the budget was considerably increased, and, you know, they were able to do some things that they hadn't been able to do outside of a very minimal budget. You know, that independence move gave them a huge opportunity, and then the Big 12 just made that, you know, that budget grow even more. So, you know, I think it's awesome. I'm really excited, because I think that, you know, if you're going to truly be competitive, I think you have to do that. And, you know, so I think they made a huge commitment. I laud the work by Tom Homo, who continues to prove he's probably as good an AD as you could ever have, and a heck of a great guy. And Santiago, who just is the dude out in the, you know, pressing the flesh and getting to know the people, the movers and the shakers. You know, I think those guys did a great job.
What is that expectation down at BYU? You know, over the years, ever since I was a player, there's been this crazy expectation of BYU with this new move into the Big 12. We get Mark Pope having a pretty good year. Now he's gone. Kevin Young's in. What is this basketball expectation of being competitive in the Big 12 and being there? What is that between fans, administration? What is that level? What is the energy down there around expectations?
Well, I would say that it's pretty expected, and probably, you know, rightfully so, with the ability and the budget and everything else, to make it to the tournament, particularly now. In the mid-majors, you know, you didn't have a whole lot of control. If there was a decision to be made, it was basically, do we let the Power Five in or do we let a mid-major? And, I mean, for a lot of years, a lot of great mid-majors kind of stood on the outside without a lot of control. But now, I think during the Dave Rose era, BYU became a nationally relevant. Mm-hmm. I think the groups helped, you know, build that. But I think, obviously, with Jimmer, similar to this Caitlin Clark thing, I think the BYU logo was fully accepted and understood, you know. And I think that what that did was just bring that awareness. So I think the lowest that anybody wants to see BYU is they want to see them get to the tournament. Like this year would be, because I lived a lot of them when I first got to BYU, you get to the tournament and you lose in the first round. And then, you know, your 28 win season doesn't seem so great. But it to me, it's about winning in the tournament, getting to the tournament and winning in the tournament. And I do believe that BYU could be really poised with this new coach and what I understand, a real commitment to NIL. I think BYU could be a fixture at the top of the, you know, top half of the Big 12 for a long time.
What does Kevin need to do to be successful at BYU and make a smooth transition from the NBA? I think that's the biggest question for him, right?
I don't think he needs to get far. I think if you look at every great BYU team in history, I think you start with the base that makes the most sense, and that is, you know, the best players that have an affinity due to religious purposes for BYU. And I think you exhaust that, because those kids, you know, a lot of kids grow up wanting to be different
play for different schools. But most kids that grew up Mormon, you know, they want to be, they grow up thinking about BYU, and because either their parents went there or their uncles went there. So I think that that's, you know, I think that's where you start. And I honestly believe in the 2 years that Mark, you know, I think he finished fifth in the WCC just a year ago. Like they got away from a lot of that. They really tried to go make, you know, the outside world kind of the priority. And they would just, hey, okay, you can come play here. You can come play here. It's interesting. This year, they really got back to playing a bunch of local kids mixed in, you know, with guys from the outside. So I think you just got to always understand what your base is. I think the recruiting in Utah is really important too, to own that, because there's great players that come out of here and you don't want to see them go other places. And then really use your international ties. I think, you know, that's a growing area, you know, that BYU has been able to tap into a little bit here, and just continue to build on that.
Let's transition back to the NBA and the Utah Jazz. Danny Ainge addressed the media today. It was really fascinating. Almost 40 minutes of remarks. Took questions for quite a while. I'm sure you listened to that, bits and pieces at the very least. What stood out to you about what Danny Ainge had to say today?
Well, first, I just love Danny's approach. I got fortunate enough to just kind of have opportunities to get to know him while I was at BYU. And I've said this before, but I think, you know, I didn't know what to expect. My expectation, I mean, Danny Ainge was basically my Jimmer Fredette, you know, and I was a kid. I grew up in that place and watched him, you know, night after night put on a show. And I have little journals of mine when I was a kid that says, you know, who's your hero? And it was Danny Ainge. So, I mean, I grew up just worshiping this dude. And so you hold those people on a pedestal, obviously. And when you meet them, you either, you know, you're either confirmed or disappointed. And I couldn't tell you how impressive he is as just a person. So down to earth for his accomplishments. And I actually had the unique opportunity to recruit his kid to BYU. And so that was always something I'll look back on. And I remember it was his son Cooper, and Cooper is a great young player, but we just didn't have enough scholarships. And so we went out and actually offered him a preferred walk-on position. And as you can imagine, I was scared to death. This is the single greatest player to ever play at BYU. And to go back there and have to say that. And his answer when I said it, as opposed to, you know, I had a lot of people didn't have his clout that had a lot more to say. But Danny basically said, looked at us, Coach Rose and I, and he said, you know what, guys, that's a fair offer. I like that. It feels good. And I'll never forget. But after tough losses, you know, not coming in and berating and saying, what were you guys thinking? More like, hey, you guys will figure it out, you know, and you're good coaches. And so I got to see that side of him. And I loved listening to him talk basketball. That's my first impression. I think beyond that, it's just interesting how, you know, he calls it like he sees it. I think he doesn't, you know, he's very authentic. I think he doesn't mince words. He was very honest about where he feels like things are. And I think that Jazz fans should be encouraged, because I heard, if things could fall into place, I heard the term big game hunting. And I feel like the Jazz could really make a move, you know, in the off season, that not knowing what it is right now, but if something were to pop and they were able to make it, I think this team next year could be really, really solid. And you know, really kind of, as he said, you know, start making your run for the playoffs.
Yeah, expect the unexpected this summer. Who knows what can happen? We've had this conversation before. We have no idea what player could become available. You're looking at the Bucks right now, and that looks like a team that could implode. That could send shockwaves through the NBA. All kinds of things can happen. You never know. But there's no doubt that he's going to try to do everything he can to make this team better. Last thing I wanted to bring up to that point, he did mention the big game hunting. He also said he doesn't want to go to training camp with six kids under 20. I think they're going to be pretty active on draft day and possibly trying to reduce the amount of young guys and use those picks for value. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think I trust what Danny said. I think they have a good plan in place. And, I think plan, as he said, you've got a lot of options. And, you know, that would probably be option, at least I heard him say ABC. I would say, you know, I would say that's down the list. And so you would assume that making some move, mixing some things, you know, they are great at finding talent. He mentioned Chris Dunn. I think Chris Dunn's been a revelation, and he was a guy they picked up out of the league. So I think that's encouraging. They know players. They understand the needs they have. And I don't know if there's a better guy putting things together on paper. I really don't.
Tim, it's always great talking hoop. We appreciate you. Crazy day. You were perfect for this. You gave us some great stuff. We appreciate it. As always, look forward to the next conversation.
Thank you so much. Go Cougs.
There you go.
Oh, man.
Sly's angry now.
I was just about to say bye.
Hey, Sly, I'm a U grad too, so go Utes.
All day, baby.
Hey, that's like a well said politician there. Good job, Tim. You're the best. Thanks.
I will not raise taxes.
Not gonna debt. Tim Lacombe, the best. All right. We got to take a break. Wish we didn't, but we have to. Coming up next, best and worst. Some interesting things going on. We get a bag on the Michigan Wolverines next. That'll be fun. 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
Your home for the best coverage of the Jazz, Utes, and Cougars is right here on The Zone. This is JJ and Alex, presented by G2G Bars on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
Back, best and worst today, JJ and Alex, Stevenson, Sylvester, Jeremiah Jensen with you for an incredible selection and unrivaled expertise on Kia, Subaru, Chevy, Jeep, Dodge, or Ram. Visit Doug Smith dealerships in American Fork and Spanish Fork. Great service starts with know-how, and nobody knows how like Doug. Hey, Doug.
That's
not my best. Boy. Yeah. All right, well.
It's in the weaning hours.
I'll learn from my mistake. I'll be better tomorrow. Real quick, we don't have a lot of time. We'll get to the best and worst quickly. Best was last night, WNBA draft. Caitlin Clark, the Caitlin Clark experience, delivered another television milestone. The WNBA draft on Monday night on ESPN, 2.45 million viewers for the WNBA draft. You compare that to the audience last year, drew 572,000, four times as many.
I was actually asking, what are those views number? Because I know I tuned in. So I'm just like, what did people tune in? Because we were talking about it so much. Although it was like slated, people pretty much knew they were going to go. But even then, so even with the NFL draft, people still tune in to things like that. So I just love to see that these women events are just increasing in such dramatic fashion. And it's just absolutely insane. So can't wait to that very first game.
It's a Caitlin Clark factor in that first game. Four times the ratings on that. Same thing is going to happen in that game. The WNBA has never seen TV ratings like they're about to see. The worst is Michigan. You knew that something was coming down the pipe. After everything that had been happening. You knew Jim Harbaugh's urgency to get out of town was for a reason. News breaks today that Michigan has reached a settlement with the NCAA for recruiting violations. No surprise. They'll serve 3 years of NCAA probation, pay a fine, and face recruiting restrictions after the university and five current or former football employees reach an agreement with the NCAA's enforcement staff on recruiting violations and coaching activities by non-coaching staff members, like spying on signal callers.
Oh, gosh.
The NCAA announced that on Tuesday. The agreed-upon penalties also include a one-year show cause order for the participating individuals. Sly, your reaction to that news?
Well, very similar to USC when Pete Carroll got out of town. He's just like, yep. I'm not trying to deal with it. But caveat to that, if I'm Michigan, I'll take that. I just got a national championship. I got to pay a little dollars, but you don't vacate my national championship? All right. That's fine. I'll take 3 years and then come back three more years. For Michigan's sake, I think they came out all right in this. You know, hopefully the other universities are all right with this, but I don't think so because they're really going to want more of a punishment for blue bloods like Michigan.
Never happened.
But yeah, it's just a quick little slap on the wrist for Michigan for me.
Just another example that the NCAA no longer has any teeth. Even what Michigan has done over the last few years to build that national championship team and the stuff they did that was not ethical in any way. If you care about sportsmanship in the game, all they get is probation. They don't care. They got a national championship, and they're going to have something like 20 guys taken in this month's NFL draft. So Michigan on probation, they don't care.
No, they don't.
They're the champs. That's JJ and Alex, 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.